Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the last day of June, Anno Domini 2018. That's right, half the year is gone, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Not only is half the year gone, but the days are getting shorter. Well, that was cheery.
And we're approaching aphelion in a week or two, our farthest point from the sun.
That's right. That's right. And I do want to thank all of our members for their generosity. We made our goal for the year. This is the last day of our fiscal year, so you still have time. By going to jazz901.org and click the Donate Now button to become a member. I also want to thank the people who were kind enough, a couple of you were kind enough to donate to Security Tango, actually, and keep that running, and I appreciate that as well. But let's get to the news. And not that you still can't donate to any of the many causes that we all have. Don't think we're done. Google has confirmed its Google Home smart speaker and Chromecast streaming sticks suffered an outage Wednesday, and it appears to have been worldwide. The outage began early Wednesday morning with confirmed reports as early as 6:20 a.m. Pacific time, which would be 9:20 a.m. our time. As of 2:49 p.m. Pacific time, Google said it had identified a fix, one that rolled out automatically over the next 6 hours. Many Google Home devices were completely kaput, throwing errors like, there was a glitch. Try again in a few seconds. Something went wrong. Try again in a few seconds. Your Google Home isn't set up yet. To get started, download the Google Home app on a phone or tablet. Earlier Wednesday, users were no longer seeing the option to cast video or audio to the Google Homecast, a Chromecast, even though another device in the same Wi-Fi network did show the option. Luckily, unplugging and replugging the device seemed to fix the problem. We old-timers are just nodding our heads sagely. Unplug it, replug it. Not all Google Home devices were having these issues, but many were. By 2:55 p.m. Pacific time on Wednesday, Google said it had the fix. We've identified a fix for the issue impacting Google Home and Chromecast users, and it will be automatically rolled out over the next 6 hours. If you would like an immediate fix, please follow the directions to reboot your device, which I'm not going to bother with now. If you're still, which is basically unplug it and plug it back in again. If you're still experiencing an issue after rebooting, contact us at Google Home Support. We are really sorry for the inconvenience and are taking steps to prevent this issue from happening in the future. It did hit an awful lot of people. So our poll of the week. It's soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google Home and Chromecast outage. Your choices are, OMG, it was a tragedy of epic proportions. It wasn't so bad. We Alexa users laugh in your general direction. And we who still talk to humans laugh at you all. What I left out, of course, was the option of, I don't ever talk to anybody, so...
You curmudgeon.
And of course, I know you'll have a lot more to say about this. If you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the first link is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first post, under poll discussion is 30 June 18, Google Home and Chromecast outage. And once you're done there, of course, you can come back here and give us a call about this or about, well, dang near anything. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I'm surprised you didn't put the comment. There was one of the solutions. Oh, there was an outage?
Yeah, right.
Well, one thing that strikes me is that implies that the internet is required to Chromecast from one of your devices to one of your other devices inside your own network.
Yes, I suppose that's true.
Yeah, why would it need
Because it doesn't do Bluetooth.
So it talks. So it's not a point-to-point connection. It goes up to the internet and says, come back down and start the Chromecast.
Well, and that's why I can start, for example, casting something from my phone and then stop it on my phone. It just, you know, and it keeps on casting to the device. It's just a way to get stuff started. It doesn't have to be actually working that way.
I was thinking about that this week. Well, we've got a Google Home in our office that we play with. And I asked it to
play. You
mean
you do very serious things
yes.
with?
Yeah. We test.
Technical.
We're testing
we test it.
Yeah. It.
Technical
so,
testing.
So we asked it to start a song on Pandora, and it or not start a song, to play music on Pandora, and it started at the beginning of the song. Does that mean that every stream is separate and there's no one global stream people just tie into
if you listen to the same station? Thought. I had that same exact thought the other day when I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. I realized that every time I say play such and so on Pandora or just play such mm-hmm. and so and it goes to Pandora, it starts at the beginning of a song. It doesn't start in the middle of a stream.
Yeah, you tune to a radio station and you might get the middle of the song.
Yeah.
So it must start a separate stream for every user? That seems like too much.
It does seem like too much, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it happens the same thing if you do podcasts over it. Mm-hmm. That pod, you know, and that podcast starts at the beginning every time. So,
I could see podcast is has a beginning and has an end. But music, if you just say you know play music, it picks
doesn't come in the middle of a tune.
A song that's already playing on that station.
Yep. On the other hand. They're Google. Do you think they're going to notice more stream?
No, well, I'm thinking the Pandora end of it.
Yeah.
They're getting it from Pandora. So maybe Pandora has to send separate streams in order to count it for copyright payment.
Oh, that's certainly a possibility.
That might be.
So they can't just say, like, we have one stream going and there's, what, 100 people listening. Mm-hmm. But that's one stream of a live show. So if you go to the stream and pick up live, you pick up in the middle.
Right.
Right.
You don't have the option to sit there and say, start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
If you can back up from where you are now to where you started before, but you can't start over again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't know who runs Pandora's back end. I'm wondering if that's, you know, if they're on AWS or they're on Google's servers. But, you know, you pay by the stream. I guess you pay by the instance.
I think what Steve was saying, though, for the artist, you know?
Yeah.
So that they get their due royalties, which, you know, they're hurting for certain
anyways.
Well,
but you can do it the other way anyway. I mean, look at our stream. When you pick up our stream, if you were to pick up our stream right now, you would come in at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You wouldn't start at the beginning again, and yet we can tell you exactly how many people are on the stream at any given time.
It's got to be different for
it's
music versus, you know...
Well, even when the station is playing its regular music, the live stream is live. You pick up right in the middle of wherever you were.
Yeah.
But the show, if you listen to a show, that comes as a beginning and an end.
Right.
Yeah, but a live stream, so that implies that like Pandora, Spotify are not technically live streams. They just start feeding you the song. I bet someone that complained that it starts in the middle of a song, and they said, okay, we'll just... not do that.
We'll fix that. Yeah.
So maybe they adjust the time, you know, play it at like, you know, 102% until it catches up to the other streams.
Oh, maybe. That's an interesting thought.
That you wouldn't notice because it goes...
Right, right, so, right.
Yeah, not exactly, twice the speed. I listened to my podcasts at 1.5 speed to get through them faster.
Sure.
And I had Tyler from the office was in the car yesterday, and he said, well, that sounds funny. Do you listen at 1.5? I said, well, yeah, I don't even notice it at 1.5. But then when I'm with my wife and she listens to hers at 1x, it sounds wrong.
Yeah, right.
Sound bites, I can't listen to 1.5 because you talk too fast. You at 1.5 is too much. I wish there was a 1.25.
Yeah, right.
You know, tweak it. Fine-tune it a little more.
Fine-tune it a little more.
Plus
a
little bit.
All right, I'll speak slower for Steve.
On the other hand,
I can do that for 2 hours if you need me to.
Oh, heck no.
I do have a hard time listening to the show when I'm not here because I want to scream the answer.
Oh, me too. Oh, me too. What was the last one we were at? Whatever we were, I was listening. Oh, I was at a funeral. On the way home, I was in the car and I kept thinking, you guys did great, but I still wanted to.
I could give a little better answer, fill in something you didn't know or.
Exactly.
I'll text it to Dave, and he usually doesn't see it till the commercial, because he's busy.
right. And I was driving, so I certainly wasn't going to text anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the way that works.
And then you turn your phone off during the show, like you should.
I always turn my phone off during the show. It's not off; it's silenced.
Silent, yeah.
So I could still get a notification that I've got a text on my watch. So
Apple is actually adding a feature to the next iOS that you can turn your silent on for a while.
Yeah.
So right now there's Do Not Disturb where, at night it will turn on and off, turn off at night and turn on in the morning automatically. But I want to say, like Android has, turn it off for 2 hours.
Right.
So I will routinely put my phone on silent at the movies and then forget to turn silent off, and then Wednesday or Thursday, my boss says, "Why didn't you answer my phone call?" Oh crap, I'm still on silent from the movie on Sunday.
Right. Well, I found a
my boss is the only one that calls me, so
right. So that's probably bad. Who cares? But if Jackie's listening, we care, Jackie, deeply. I found a great app for Android. I don't know if it exists for iOS, called Mute by Location. So when I went to the movie theater, anytime I go to a movie theater or church or here, the first time I say, okay, this location for X number of feet around me, because movie theaters are big, right? Whenever I'm here, mute the phone.
Yep.
And whenever I leave here, unmute the phone.
Yeah, on my the Pixel phone.
Yep.
I've got, there's a feature there that says silence. And I can sit there and tell it 1 hour, 2 hour. Pull down the
and
menu.
That's what he's getting on iOS now. He'll be getting that on iOS.
Well, I've always had it since I got the phone.
Right.
Google phone. You just pull it down, hit silent, and boom. And you can also program. Like I have automatically programmed that every Saturday from 12 to 2, silence my phone.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't even think about it.
That's what's nice about this auto mute, because I never know when I'm going to go to a movie.
True.
Yeah. But so I've got pretty much every movie theater, every church I go to, everything I go to in that phone. So now when I go to a theater, I don't even pay attention anymore unless I've never been to that theater before or that church or that whatever.
Make sure your ringtone is the Hallelujah Chorus and then
it doesn't matter. Yeah. At my wedding, my father-in-law, God rest his soul, got everybody in the church together. We're all obviously not around. We're hiding wherever you hide. And he got everybody in the church together, and he said, the wedding vows should be done by X at X time. So let's all set an alarm on our watches at the time for X time. Son of a pup, if that last I do...
The alarms went off.
All over the church, alarms started going off. And I thought, the man is a witch. The man should be burned at the stake. He's a warlock.
Especially
and
doing
needs
that
to
in
die.
A church.
Right. Well, he was a warden of that church. So, I suppose who's going to tell him no? But but I love Mute by Location because, I never know where I'm going to be when I'm going to be there.
And there are apps for the iPhone that will do that now, but you may not want to get them because it's coming for free in the next OS.
Well, not the Mute by Location, but the... Oh, that's coming too?
Yep.
Oh, that's nice. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. All right. I like that.
That's the wrong show.
I don't program this talk to
that around. Music tells you it's just 166 hours. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Yovel and Joe Belonsky, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online. online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yeah, normally the station is le jazz hot, but now it's the computer stuff broiling.
Yeah, really.
Actually, it's what? What'd you say it was? 89 degrees?
It says 89 out at the airport, 92 here in Greece.
We have a lot of customers that in the wintertime, they'll put their computer towers on the floor to heat their feet.
Yeah.
But in the summertime, they'll put it up on the desk pointed away from them because it's too warm. And it usually points to somebody else. And so they'll have competing airflows.
And we should probably take this moment to talk about that. When you have this kind of weather, this kind of heat, you really need to pay attention to your electronic devices. If your computer sits in the window, or just sits in an area where the sun gets on it for an hour or two a day, you want to be very careful with that. You want to be very careful if your computer is in a place where it doesn't have a cross breeze, like you've stuck it under a desk or you've stuck it in a cubby somewhere, which is a great place to put it in the winter, but not a very good place for it in the summer.
Yeah, I always hated those the desks that became common with the cubby you'd shove your tower in.
Right. Yeah, so then close the door on it.
Close the door on it so it gets no airflow. It gets full of dust, and you can't get to the cables when you need
them. Yeah, but other than that, it's
other
fine.
Other than that, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
What have the Romans ever done for us?
But you also want to pay attention to you really want to pay attention to the heat. You can look at many computers now have sensors that will tell you what the heat is, and you can load apps that will read those sensors for you. I do that on my Linux box. Right up at the top, there's a set of sensors.
Yep.
So I always know when it's starting to get a little too warm. Also, the make sure you've got enough fans in your case, and you can get fans that you can put in those cubbies.
Yeah.
Blow air around.
Yeah, they're
too.
You can get even simple little muffin fans.
Exactly.
You know, little tiny fans that you can all the retail stores, just a small, say, 6-inch fan. As long as you're getting the air to circulate.
Right.
That's the key thing, because even starting tomorrow, more so. Yep. And the rest of the week, it's going to be hot, folks. They're saying that we're going to have a good chance of breaking an all-time record since, I think, back
2001.
In
2001. No, I mean 1901.
Yeah, 1901, and have so many hot days.
Yep.
And this continuous heat, especially if you don't have air conditioning in that room, and it's getting a little warm, you know.
If you've got a small case machine, like, let's say a laptop. You know, particularly with the Macs and the Chromebooks that don't have fans in them, you want to be very careful that you keep it out of direct sunlight and that you make sure that you've got, I know people who, like Steve said, put their computers down on a rug. Well, if it's a desktop, that's not so bad. But if you put a laptop down on a rug or on a towel on something, you're now blocking the vents underneath.
The heat's going to build up underneath.
Right. So you want to be very careful where you put your computer and how you manage it. Keep it out of direct sunlight and leave that for the dogs and the cats. Let them sit there. You keep your systems somewhere else. So this is if you find that your machine is getting warm, feel free to turn it off and, read a book, listen to the radio.
Or talk to somebody else.
Talk to another human being. I know that's a little out there, but it's possible. But the idea is that you need to be aware that these devices can easily overheat. And when they overheat, it used to be, if you overheated a device, you just swapped out that card. Nowadays, everything is all in one, particularly on a laptop. So if you overheat just one component on that machine, you're replacing the motherboard.
Yep.
Just toss it away.
The thing that is, though, even trying to get a replacement motherboard on a laptops, by the time a model comes out, trying to find a replacement, forget it. Right. They're already moved on to two models on down the road.
We used to find that at RIT. We would buy identical machines for everybody because it made it easier for us. So we always bought fairly high-end machines that were new, right? We didn't buy, you know, last year's model or any of that nonsense. Even so, if we had to replace a machine 6 months later, we could no longer get that exact motherboard.
Yep. No, they've made some revisions or changes and everything else, and no, it's not going to do it.
We've even seen it worse than that. A company will buy, you know, 10 computers with identical part numbers, and on the inside, they're different. Because,
yes, we've had that too.
Oh, yeah, board modifications. Back in the day, remember when we used to get the real tall towers?
Yep.
We'd take that apart, you know, and go to put stuff in. And, it should be the same. And go, nope, this one's got a different revision because you could see the wires were hand-soldered on there to make a revision.
They still do that. You just don't see it because it's in a laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's layered.
Yep.
Or they ran out of the revision A hard drives and got revision Bs.
Or
that was the 10,001th computer that week, and so they got the next batch.
Or more likely is they bought a million of component A, and then when they went to buy it again, component A plus was available for the same price. Well, let's get that.
Yeah.
Or component B, which is almost identical, is cheaper.
Or they could, just resistors and everything else. Right. I mean, capacitors.
Right. Those components could be resistors, capacitors, anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
Even the chips, even within the chipsets, you know, the revision that they burn to the CPU could be just, that was a Friday one. Now they're going to Monday's revision and burning a new PROM to the chips.
That's why when people call and say I'm having a problem with Windows, look, one of the things that we know for a fact is that upgrading from 7 or 8 to 10 caused issues. Most of those issues are driver issues.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to get the new to get the drivers from your manufacturer, you need the serial number of your machine because the set of drivers you get may not be the same ones as somebody else with an identical machine. Identical in air quotes. Gets.
Yeah. One thing, I guess a lot of folks, I don't know why they wouldn't know this, but I had a number of folks asked me, in the past few weeks, they've been hearing us talk about, updating the drivers and all that. And a number more Dell computers. I says, well, just look down in the bottom for your service tag. Oh, it's never been in for service. I go, no, listen, on the bottom or on the side of the machine.
Somewhere on the machine is a sticker.
Yeah. On the laptops and even the machines, there's a sticker on there that says service tag.
Right.
And you'll see a number there.
Many companies called it a serial number, but Dell called it a service tag.
Right. And so what you do, it's a little more specific because the service tag, if you put that service tag number in on the web, the Dell website, it takes you to your exact machine. It will tell you, it identifies specifically your machine. You can look for any updates that are, to that machine. So you write that in, it'll take you to there so you can look for the correct updates as far as drivers and everything else that are in that machine.
Right.
And another good way to double check to see what you actually have in there is if you go into the control panel, there's an icon there that says Device Manager. If you click on that device manager, you'll see down the side all the devices that are in there and little plus signs. Say if you want to know your video card, if you click on the plus sign next to your video card, it'll tell you your video card. So when you're searching the Dell website, because again, going back to that, they could put different video cards in the same machine. Depending on where it fell in the line, it might have this revision of a video card, and then the next week they added a different one. It'll tell you, and you can download the correct driver by selecting that one.
Right. So you need to be aware of that. You need to be careful of what you're getting. Oh, my friend has an identical machine. I just got his.
Nope. The video cards. I saw this one Dell. There was he had it listed for this one video card, and I went over to the device manager, and I was like, that's not. And that was causing issues for him.
Right.
So I deleted it. Had it refound, updated the drivers, oh, gee, it's working fine now. YouTube's playing all the whole nine yards.
Yep.
Because those updates don't always work with Microsoft.
Right.
They can screw a machine up. They can go for the best guess. But you've got to know what is exactly in your machine.
Right.
Close enough won't always get it.
Right. So you need to be very aware and very careful about how you set that machine up and what you put on it. Let me do another. Speaking of Microsoft. Oh, this is so fraught. Microsoft says its facial recognition tools are getting better at identifying people with darker skin tones than before, according to a company blog post on Tuesday. The error rates have been reduced by as much as 20 times for men and women with darker skin and by 9 times for all women. So let me give you some background. Back in the day, and I'll actually, well, we'll talk about this at the end. The company says it's been training its AI tools with larger and more diverse data sets, which has led to the progress. If we are training machine learning systems to mimic decisions made in a biased society using data generated by that society, then those systems will necessarily reproduce its biases, said Hannah Wallach, a Microsoft researcher in the blog post. Let me translate that for you. When Microsoft tested their facial recognition, they did it with white men. That's simple enough. In February, a report from MIT's Media Lab tested the facial recognition systems from Microsoft, IBM, and China's Megvi and found that up to 35% of darker-skinned women had their gender misidentified by the systems. The report only confirmed what many had suspected for years. Facial recognition systems can be biased by limited data sets and other factors like systemic racism. Back in 2015, Google identified a software engineer's black friends in a photo as gorillas and had to apologize for the error. Back in 2010, Microsoft's Kinect motion sensing system didn't work on darker-skinned people at all. Still, while Microsoft's announcement today indicates a reduction in racial bias within its facial recognition system, if law enforcement gets their hands on the improved facial recognition tool, it's unclear how that might play out for people of color and whether that could exacerbate already problematic practices. Microsoft partners with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and its facial recognition tool is offered to government agents as a resource. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella clarified in a memo last week that Microsoft is not working with the U.S. government on any project related to separating children from their families at the border, but he didn't address how facial recognition might play a role in benefiting ICE's work. So how is facial recognition at recognizing you? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, this was a problem when Microsoft first came out with the Kinect, which was a motion recognition system. You could play games by standing in front of you. It's like the Wii, right? You know, you hold the little paddles and mm-hmm. do the stuff. Well, this did it actually by your body. It did not recognize black people well. It didn't recognize most dark-skinned people of any shade if there were not bright lights in the room. So the only thing it also had a great deal of trouble recognizing women. So part of that is women change their hairstyles more often than men do. If you're standing in front of the same device day after day
makeup too.
A man usually his hair remains fairly the same. Fairly,
yeah.
Certainly for all the buzz cut programmers at Microsoft. So even if it grows slowly over time and the system adjusts. But for women who might wear their hair up one day, down another day, different makeup,
color it,
different coloring, etc., for both lipstick, for example, and eye shade and hair.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who was of color, and particularly if it was a slightly darker room, it absolutely didn't work at all, and it didn't. And I shouldn't single out Microsoft because Google had exactly the same problem. Apple had the same problem when their facial recognition on the iPhone started out.
There was also a problem with the watch where the sensors on the back of the watch couldn't read darker skin or couldn't read through a tattoo.
Right. So it was an interesting time for all of them as they tried to explain that their racial bias was unconscious. Not that they didn't have one, but that it was unconscious.
Inadvertent.
They mostly just worked with people who were not of color or female. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in a minute with a whole lot more sound bites on Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. And we hope that you all had a great time at this year's Jazz Festival. It was wall-to-wall music, wall-to-wall people, wall-to-wall fun.
And still one more day of it. You can go out there, folks, and enjoy some great music. Ends tonight. Tonight's the last night, so if you haven't had a chance, you know, take plenty of water with you and go down there and enjoy some great music. If you get a chance, stop by the tent and say hello for sure.
And drop a buck in the queue.
That goes without saying.
That's right. But I said it anyway.
Yeah.
Definitely. Most things that go without saying actually need to be said.
Need to be said, absolutely. All right, here's an interesting article. Facebook knows the historical app audit it's conducting in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica data misuse scandal is going to result in a tsunami of skeletons tumbling out of its closet. It's already suspended around 200 apps as a result of the audit, which remains ongoing with no formal timeline announced for when the process and any associated investigations that flow from it will be concluded. CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced the audit on March 21st, writing then that the company would investigate all apps that had access to large amounts of information before we changed our platform to dramatically reduce data access in 2014, and we will conduct a full audit of any app with suspicious activity. But you do have to question how much the audit exercise is, first and foremost, intended to function as PR damage limitation for Facebook's brand, given the company's relaxed response to a data abuse report concerning a quiz app with about 120 million monthly users, which it received right in the midst of the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Because despite Facebook being alerted about the risk posed by the leaky quiz apps in late April via its own data abuse bug bounty program, they were still live on the platform a month later. It took about a further month for the vulnerability to be fixed. And sure, Facebook was certainly busy over that period, busy dealing with a major privacy scandal. Perhaps the company was putting rather more effort into pumping out a steady stream of crisis PR, including taking out full-page newspaper adverts where it wrote that we have a responsibility to protect your information. If we can't, we don't deserve it. Versus actually locking down the platform per its repeated claims, even though the company's long and rich privacy-hostile history suggests otherwise. Also, let's not forget that in early April, Facebook quietly confessed to a major security flaw of its own when it admitted that an account search and recovery feature had been abused by malicious actors who, over what must have been a period of several years, had been able to surreptitiously collect personal data on a variety or on a majority of Facebook's users, about 2 billion users, that's billion with a B, and use that intelligence for whatever they fancied. So are you still using Facebook? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And people may have heard the news that the Cambridge Analytica company that was responsible for this, they didn't do anything wrong. They followed Facebook's rules.
Right.
The rules were wrong. and so Cambridge Analytica filed bankruptcy and was dissolved because of this mess.
Well, they just
and folded into the new company name called Emerdata.
Emerdata.
Emerdata is a British political consulting firm which still exists.
Right. They just changed the name to protect the guilty. You know, everybody uses Facebook because Facebook is convenient. But let us never forget that Mark Zuckerberg famously said...
That's something in your throat there. Don't you?
famously said, privacy is dead. Although he will not release his own data, he will certainly release all of yours and sell it to anybody with a dollar. And we continue to use Facebook. We continue to give Facebook our information. We put the Facebook app on our phone so Facebook can follow us everywhere we go and read all our text messages and everything else. We answer quizzes that ask for information that is part of our security questions.
No, I'm getting the Infinity War quiz. Which Infinity War character are you?
Right.
Stop doing those quizzes.
Yes. Right. Well, but you know, you get one that says, "Well, your elf name or whatever the hell it is. Yeah, your first name is the month you were born. The second name is the day you were born, and the last name is the year you were born." Well, isn't your birth date something that can be used
private
to steal
information?
Your identity?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Or the one that was so blatant. One was it was like your mafia name or something. The name of your first dog, plus the first street you lived on. Those are both security questions.
Yep.
Yeah, it used to be mother's maiden name was the only security question.
Right.
At least they don't ask that anymore because most people realize that's bad.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like the sites that ask you to create your own security question and then answer it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will always say, I'm not going to give you the ones that I use, but I will always lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if they ask you your favorite color. A gun.
Well, one of the things I like recommending because it makes it a little easier to remember. You know, what was your first car? And you answer blue, because you had a blue Ford.
Right.
So it's related.
Yeah.
To trigger your memory, but it isn't the real answer.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
some people will use a password manager.
Right. I use MPass to do all
to
of
fill
that.
In a 64 character.
What street did you live on? House.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I mean, it can be simple, stupid things like that that only have meaning to you. But as long as you know the correct answer to that particular question, you're golden. And you've created something secure.
Right. I was impressed a little bit. I was helping a customer last week set up a new Apple ID. They didn't already have an Apple ID. That shocked me to begin with. But they wouldn't let your answers be the same to the two questions. So you have to make three questions. And they wanted to use the same answer for all three questions.
Yeah, you can't.
It wouldn't let you.
Right, right.
Some systems will let you answer this, put in the same answer to all three questions.
Right, but I always say, you're right, I always say lie. Mm-hmm. Don't just lie small. What's your favorite color? A blue. It's really green. What's your favorite color? The Starship Enterprise.
Chartreuse.
Yeah.
No, it's something that's not even
totally
a color.
Obscure. Not even a color. Yeah. Not even related to
somebody
color.
Did that to me, 20 years ago. I used to be, I was a charter member of AOL back when it was Apple Inc. Personal Edition.
Apple Inc. Personal Edition, exactly.
I was a forum leader, so I had a privileged account and got a free membership.
Right.
And that later came around into a class action lawsuit against working overtime and not getting paid minimum wage.
Right,
because they paid us $20 a month, but so people were trying to break into my account all the time. Somebody engineered their way; they must have social engineered it in, and was able to get into my account, change the password. So I'm trying to log back in, and I can't. And the security question at the time was, "Who's the Secretary of State?" So I put in the Secretary of State; it didn't work. So I tried the last one. Didn't work. So then I have to call tech support, and they wanted the checking account number that I used to sign up for AOL with, that was like four banks ago and 10 years ago. And so I could tell he could see the answer at his end because every time I gave an answer. So I went through all of the secretaries of state. I finally was able to prove my identity, get my account back. The answer the bad guy had put in to prevent me from getting back was Pee Wee Herman.
There you go.
So that's what a lot of times that's what the bad guys will do. They will change your password and then change your answer so you can't get back in. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing more and more these days, the bad guys, if they get your password, they won't do anything to alert you. They won't change it. They won't lock you out because they want you in that account making purchases and getting emails with your credit card numbers in them.
Right.
So they can keep stealing your money. They won't lock you out of the account.
Also, as an ex-system administrator, let me take this back a step. They could see your answer. That means either they kept it in plain text or it was a two-way algorithm.
Yeah.
So when both of those are wrong.
Yeah.
When they get breached. Have I Been Pwned is over $5 billion now.
Yeah. When somebody has your password. Now, of course, you all know, because we've harangued you about this enough, never use the same password in two places. But when somebody gets your password legally, when you sign onto a site, they should use what's called a one-way hash. That is to say, they turn it into a series of nonsense characters that can't be reversed back into an actual password. That's the mistake Microsoft is still making on their systems when they encrypt your password. They're using the same algorithm they used for Windows 95. That everybody knows. I don't think there's a four-year-old on the planet who doesn't know, a four-year-old hacker on the planet who doesn't know what that algorithm is and how to use it.
Still using MD5?
What?
They're probably still using MD5.
They're still using MD5.
No, probably MD4.
probably MD1.
Yeah.
So it's you need to understand that you could, well, and this is, of course, the other problem. You can do everything right at your end, and then some jamoke who calls himself a systems administrator or herself will do something stupid at their end, and everybody gets your password, and millions and billions of emails. So that's why you use
more than 5 billion accounts have been hacked.
Right. That's why you use a different password for every system, not because you will cause a problem, but because the other end will cause a problem, and you limit the amount of damage they do by only using that password in that one place.
And we hear from a lot of people saying, I don't have anything worth stealing. Why do I have to worry about this? Well, you have a name and you have an identity, and you can give the bad guy anonymity. So the police come and arrest you when they do something bad in your name.
Right.
Or they sign out new credit cards in your name.
Exactly.
Who cares if your credit, you may have bad credit history? Someone will give you a $500 credit card.
That's right. And then you're in for that $500.
Yep.
And you can say, well, I wouldn't pay it. Well, then you go to jail. That's how that works.
And then when you claim identity theft, then that takes years to get the incorrect information off your credit reports.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of banks will protect you. Like I've said before, I once got a call from my bank saying, did you buy fur coats in Florida? I said, no. And they said, well, we'll cancel your card. But that certainly doesn't happen if somebody gets your information and then takes out a new credit card.
Yeah, the pre-approved credit cards in the mail you get all the time. I wish companies would stop doing that, because one of the common ways thieves get to it is they go through your mail.
Yeah.
They take the pre-approved credit card. They fill out a change of address. Oh, yeah, I'll take this pre-approved credit card, and here's my new address.
Right.
So you never get the bill. You never know anything happened.
Right. And it's still on you. And then it goes on your credit report, and you're done. So
you're hosed.
Right. So you really need to pay attention. And you limit. You can't get rid of it entirely, but you can limit the damage by using a different password on every site you go to. And by different, I mean, no kidding, different. Not squirrel 1, squirrel 2, squirrel 3.
Squirrel 2018.
Right,
squirrel 2019.
Right. So yeah, you really need different sets of passwords. And again, we've always said, you don't need to do, you know, 473 ampersand left elbow J. You need to do long but easy passwords. I Think That I Shall Never See is a long and very complex password, particularly if you use capital I's and et cetera.
The problem there is that what are called dictionary attacks, where the bad guy feeds in a dictionary to get to your password. Right. They've also started doing, you know, Bartlett's familiar quotes. So if your password is a popular poem. So,
right. It needs to be something obscure if you're going to do something like that. But, you know, if you use numbers and ampersands and, you know, all kinds of symbols, plus capitals and lowercase, you can still do it. The horse battery staple thing with an ampersands and things in there is what you need. Listen, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life, but, you know, you're not done. You get to do it again. We're going to be here for another hour. You might as well stick around. What else you got to do? It's too hot to go outside and do anything. So stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, and truly grateful to you that you have allowed us to continue to be solely member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let me once again thank everybody. As Rob tweeted and put on Facebook yesterday, we have reached our goal for the year. And not a moment too soon, as today is the last day of our fiscal calendar. So thank you all so much for those of you who are kind and generous enough to support us. And you still have a day to do more for those of you who missed it and would like to get in on this fiscal year. You can do that easily. Just go to jazz901.org and hit the donate now button become a member of the family. We'd love to have you. I like this story. Asus Tech Computer leads Apple in world PC shipments, boasting a 9.3 share versus Apple's 9% share. And that 0.3 doesn't sound like much, but it's millions and millions of computers. But the Taiwanese PC maker has seen that share declining, market research firm TrendForce says. So the firm, better known as Asus, just came out with what it describes as an overdue technological advance, a smartphone-sized, touch-sensitive second laptop screen that can be used as a touchpad. Known as the ScreenPad, this is the flagship feature of its $2,300 notebook PC, the ZenBook Pro 15. Some said this feature is akin to Apple's move to connect iPhones and iPads as second screens for its own laptops. Chinese PC developer Lenovo also has its own take on this trend. Its YogaBook tablet, released in 2016, works on two screens. On the whole, Asus's share in the notebook market has been declining year by year, so the main purpose of launching products with ScreenPad is to maintain its share in the consumer electronics market. The ZenBook Pro 15 debuted at the 2018 Computex Taipei Tech Show earlier this month. Will let users work off the main screen with the standard keyboard, but they can switch to the touchscreen with a click of an F key at the top of the keyboard. A configurable toolbar on the phone-sized screen pad can link the device's app launcher, which is also configurable. The Asus's screen includes support for YouTube, Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint, although details on what that support entails are still a little sketchy. The screen pad can also work in screen extender mode, meaning Microsoft Windows recognizes it as an extra screen and allows open windows to be added to it, according to Asus's product description, which is really nice because in a lot of cases you want to be able to move toolbars off the main page, mm-hmm. and you can now do that. It's too easy to say whether those offers will give Asus now the world's fourth biggest PC vendor that coveted market share boost. The experiment is a curious one for Asus, which typically relies on traditional PCs and expensive, powerful laptops for gamers to support its $7 billion in market capitalization. The ScreenPad may struggle to find its niche in the with the pad's fixed location, limiting its potential use cases. Users could ultimately prefer to use their existing phones for cross-screen tasks, which is certainly a possibility, somebody at Gartner said. However, Asus could differentiate itself from other brands if it allows app developers to take advantage of the second screen. If the ScreenPad is limited to Asus only, then it's likely developers won't find a large enough user base to justify all of their time and effort. So would you want a second screen for your laptop? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
I have the second screen on my Mac, the touch bar, and I don't, maybe because I'm such a long-time user, I don't use it for anything other than the F keys that it replaced, but it might be interesting to have a screen in place of the trackpad.
Right, so essentially what it is the place where you normally have a trackpad and a laptop, it's now a screen about the size of a cell phone, so about a 5-inch, you know, layer cell phone down on over your trackpad, that's about what it would look like.
And in addition to becoming the trackpad, it's also a second screen. One of the pictures they show from the Asus website is a music player, which happens, you know, when you're in the iTunes app on the Apple, that shows up on your little screen. But big screens are better than little screens.
Big screens show more.
Show more. There were some prototype speculation that the entire keyboard could be replaced by a screen.
Right.
That way the keys can change languages easily without needing to pull the tops off.
The problem with that has always been twofold. First, it's very expensive to replace a cheap keyboard with an expensive screen. But secondly, if you're a typist of any sort, it's very bad for your hands to do that.
So it won't be us old folks. It will be the new kids.
Well, but even so, it'll ruin their... I mean, they'll get carpal tunnel a lot quicker.
Well, and they've done a lot. With the trackpad has haptic feedback, so there's no physical button you push anymore, but it still feels like it because they've figured that out.
Right.
And so that can help with your touch typing. But yeah, you're right. You won't actually be moving the keys up and down. In fact, a lot of people are really annoyed by the newest Apple keyboards because the travel is so short.
Right.
And I'm a pretty hard typist myself. In fact, that actually we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week. Apple has created a repair extension for the 2015, 16, and 17 MacBooks with that super thin keyboard that has probably, you know, a grain of dust gets under your key top and the key quits working.
What do they call it, the butterfly keyboard?
Yeah, butterfly key. And the older keys were scissor keys.
Right.
And so the new models with that.
The new ones will be the backstroke keys.
The butterfly 2 keyboards on 2017... seem to have a less repair incidence than the 2016 models. But now Apple is going to cover that keyboard repair for the key failures like that for 4 years from date of purchase.
Right.
Even if you didn't buy the extended warranty. So that's how I have a 2016 model. My delete key was having trouble for a while, but I was able to blow it out. And that's their user fix is a can of compressed air and blowing the keys out at different angles.
Right.
Because it literally sometimes is a grain of dust gets under the key and there's so little key travel.
And it's not a bad thing to try because A, cans of air are cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And B, it means you're not having to schlep it over to somewhere, maybe be without it for a few days.
And just dust and everything else in the house. I mean, moving around, it happens. And
I have cats, and they have fur.
Cat fur, yeah. But you have to make sure that you don't let it condense, so it sprays water.
Right.
Yeah. And people have the habit of eating near their computer.
Right. Right. Well, that's why you can get, particularly for Apple, because they're all the same keyboard. Those little overlays, the skins that you put on that cover the keys.
Mm-hmm. We've seen people that still has been a problem because it gets in under the edges, and so one of our customers actually taped it down.
Very nice.
Tape around the edges. So most of them will have adhesive, so they stick down, but it's not sealed all the way around the edge.
Right.
And that also helps with spills. I had a computer in this week where someone accidentally spilled milk into the keyboard.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that's a part on my desk now, drying out, and hopefully.
Oh, and let me just back up. Don't lie to your technicians.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've taken a keyboard, but I said, what did you do to it? Nothing. Did you spill something on it? No. Then you take it apart and there's liquid inside it.
Mm-hmm.
How did that liquid get there? And that liquid, by the way, is coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it condensed out of the air. I drink a lot of coffee.
It wasn't me. It was somebody else. Well, did anyone spill? So we've had to start asking, is it possible anyone could have spilled on it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But we had one that it got puked in at a dorm room.
You.
And we didn't know that until we opened it up.
Yeah.
You.
Tell your technician that.
We didn't know there's a tier 6.
Yeah.
Apple has different tiers for. It was a tier 6 beyond economical repair. We ain't touching it.
Yeah, right.
But we touched it because you didn't tell us.
Right, exactly. Yeah, all you got to do is tell them. They'll handle it, but you got to tell them.
Because people are afraid it's going to blow, you know, mm-hmm. it's going to mess up the warranty or that it won't get repaired. It's already messed
it's
up.
It's obvious once you open it up.
Yeah.
So.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. How are you?
Well, we're a little warm around the edges, but we're doing okay.
Good.
A couple of things. Just out of curiosity, Dave's been talking about people putting a dollar in the jar when they go to the Jazz Fest. How did that work out this year? Did it do better than past years? Or
we don't know.
Oh,
we haven't been given the until you know the Jazz Fest is over. Then Rob will let us know.
Oh, okay.
But people have been doing it. Yep.
And we want to thank each and every one of you for your generosity. It's wonderful to see that you want to keep this show and this station on the air, and we very much appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And today's the last day that you have the Jazz Fest.
So you still have
still
a chance
to go
run
out
down and throw
go down there and stuff some more dollar bills in there.
And we say dollar bills. If you want to throw in a 5 or a 10 or a 20 or a 100, we don't mind.
We won't certainly say no.
We won't say no.
Okay. You asked a question earlier, what are you still using Facebook for? Pictures of my grandkids, which I still don't get, but my wife does, so I go in and on her phone and actually share them externally to myself because it's the only way I can get them.
Right.
And my Jazz 90.1 posts, and Mr. Linton has been most prolific this week.
Right. And I do. I said that somewhat facetiously. I mean, we all use Facebook. The important thing is what do you use it for? If you're using it to take all those quizzes that give away all your private information, stop.
Yeah, no matter what your privacy settings are, anything you type into Facebook will probably end up public.
Right. Let us never forget that Mark Zuckerberg famously said privacy is dead and is selling your data to everybody. So the less data you put in, the better off you are.
And a lot of times,
as little as possible for
right.
Well, and a lot of times it's not even you. That was the big problem with Cambridge Analytica. Was it 50,000 people filled out the form? 50 million people's data was lost?
Right.
Because your friends will add you or tag you to a list or forward it to you, and now you've been associated with that privacy issue. So just don't friend anyone.
Yeah, well.
But then you can't see their posts
too late
when you
for
want
that.
To. Yeah.
That's under the heading of the ongoing fun from Microsoft and their various updates.
Yeah.
Got the major update on both the computers. The wife's laptop went through it fairly well and didn't really hiccup a lot, which is surprising because the HP tends to. Then my box this time around did the update, and when it got done, it kept trying to reboot and fix something, and it was running. So I said, okay, but it said it wasn't successfully complete. So I went back and looked at the error messages, and there wasn't anything. But when it tried to shut down, it was telling me that USB driver wasn't current, but that didn't show up anywhere. So when I went looking, there were no yellow marks, and I was like, really? So I went in and checked USB driver, and it was, I don't know, 2008 or something ridiculous like that. And I said, okay, update it. Came back and says, you have the current update.
Right.
Okay. About 4 or 5 on and off cycles later, which was over the course of several, I just kept using it and turning it off when I was done and turning it back on when I came back to it. And it finally, all of a sudden, the error message went away and it was fine again. So I was like, okay, they fixed whatever it was. It was a bug, but it was like, I'm looking at it going, really? You tell me you can't complete the update, but then you don't tell me what's wrong.
Yeah, that's Microsoft. There you go.
Yeah.
Welcome to the world of Microsoft.
That's kind of what I was.
You know, see, it's exactly the opposite. When I first started using Linux, if there's an error, you get pages of information about what went wrong. And I'm thinking, I don't need 90% of this. But they give
what
it all to
you. What are zombie corpses and why do I have too many of them?
Right. Right. Right.
Okay. Lugar meetings.
Yeah.
When and where?
I have no idea.
Oh, well.
I think the third Thursday, I think.
Yeah. I don't know what Lugar.org still has to say for itself.
Okay.
They seem to have stopped updating that in 2016.
Nice.
I don't know. Lugar is, or at least was, the Linux users group of Rochester.
Maybe they moved to Facebook like everybody else.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, that's a possibility.
I'm thinking I'm going to wind up going Linux eventually, and I was thinking maybe adding them to my monthly meetings I attend and getting together with some Linux people and finding out what I should be looking for or aware of when I do the conversion from Windows to Linux.
Yeah, it might be interesting to see about starting that up again. But right now I don't know who runs it or anything else about it, quite frankly.
We almost feel a little the same way in the Mac users group, that the Mac is now mainstream and our membership is dwindling because you don't need users group much anymore. So we all just get together and talk.
Right. All right, we got to go. Thanks, Andy.
Remind everybody, Thursday is the Google's meeting.
Yep. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I just have to mention that a heat index of 105 would make my daughter, who lives in Tucson, laugh. That's all.
What's the temperature in Tucson?
The temperature and the heat index, of course, are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the phones. Our next caller is Karen from Brockport, New York. Hi, Karen. What's up?
Hi. I've worked through the problems we had with Windows 10 updates, so I don't need to ask about that. But I wanted to ask about something different.
Okay.
TuneIn Radio and one of my Roku players updated, and now some of the players. Radio stations that I had been able to play before, it says it can't play the stream. Your station is okay still, but some of the ones that he had before says it can't find the stream. And I wondered, how do I find out which ones will continue to be working with it?
Are these saved bookmarks, or are they?
Well, the bookmarks I had got wiped out when it updated.
Okay. So maybe the maybe.
They may be gone.
Are you sure that stream still exists?
Yes, they're still showing up on the list of stations that you supposedly can access.
But when you go to them, you get some sort of error message?
Yes, the screen display is different, but it says an error about cannot find the stream or cannot connect to the stream.
Okay.
But if you go to, probably if you went to the website for the individual station, it would play. It's just not playing as part of Radio.
Yeah, this is actually a known problem, and every time I look at it, I get every answer seems to be thanks for reporting this issue. The dev team is looking into this.
Oh,
are you listening to this on your computer or on an Amazon Echo or a Google
Roku,
Home?
Roku.
A Roku 3. Actually, have a Roku 2 and a Roku 3. It updated itself on the Roku 3.
Does the Roku 2 still work?
Yes.
That's interesting. So it's a bug in their software.
Yeah, the 3.
Yeah, it's a problem with the software.
Or a feature.
Yeah.
As they'll put it. They'll never say it's a bug. It's a feature that has to be corrected.
Right. But then the other part of it is one of the stations I had in there was WBEN, the news station from Buffalo, and they're playing a message saying that they're moving to radio.com.
Oh, well, yeah, some people have a problem With TuneIn, and I'm not, you know, whatever, whether it's money or who knows, but there have been issues for years with TuneIn and Roku, with stations disappearing and reappearing, with repeating audio. For example, it plays the same song over and over and over again, or the same phrase of a song over and over and over again. And I don't honestly know what to tell you about that. I wish I did.
Do you have a TuneIn account, or are you just using the free player?
I just use the free player.
You might want to sign up for a free TuneIn account, because okay. I'm seeing information here on how to associate your account on your Roku. So you tell Roku your TuneIn account, and maybe that will help.
And the other thing I noticed on the Roku 3 is they've added a lot more podcasts.
Right.
Maybe they're moving more to podcasts than from the actual radio.
Well, a lot of traditional radio shows have started doing podcasts as basically on-demand listen to past shows. And we're seeing a surge in podcasts. We've been doing it for years. We've been seeing a surge in podcasts for traditional radio shows to be able to listen to the old, you know, the previous shows when you can't listen live. So I'm wondering if that's been that's the fight that the Roku and TuneIn are having.
Right, a lot of people are having the same issue you're having. One person here says the TuneIn app for Roku just had a revamp. Favorites access now requires several clicks. The screensaver is gone, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of people are saying they're reverting to Shoutcast for now, and they're waiting for TuneIn to fix their fixes.
Okay. Well, your station still works on TuneIn and both Roku's and on a tablet and on my phone. So.
Well, that's the only important one, really.
Yeah.
That's right. And I'm a member, so that's important.
There we go. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Good luck. I really wish we had a better answer for you, but it's clearly something going on at Roku's end, and they have to deal with it. There's nothing you can do about it.
And if you would, please let us know how you make out by, you know, maybe they'll get that fixed this week.
Check for another update and see if another one comes to fix it.
Yeah. Okay. All righty.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Have a good week. Stay cool.
Bye.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues when you have something like that. There's the app in the device itself. There's the connection between the device and the network. There's the station at the other end. There's the system at the other end that runs that station.
A lot of factors.
Right. And so when you find something like TuneIn works on one machine but doesn't work on another machine, and it works in one medium and doesn't work in another medium, that's clearly something they've done. It could just be a bad update on Karen's and one of Karen's Roku's, and maybe deleting the app and reinstalling it. But then you got to reinstall all your stations.
Yeah.
That's one thing a TuneIn account will do for you is you can save your playlists on the TuneIn website, and
right.
when you log into TuneIn on any other device, it'll find them.
Yep.
Right. And it's a very beautiful thing. TuneIn is a very beautiful thing, but it is not, unfortunately, perfect. And there are lots of other things like it. Shoutcast does something very similar, and of course, Pandora and Spotify and yada, yada, yada.
I'm trying to find out who owns radio.com. And they're hiding themselves because for the longest time there was the TuneIn app and then there was the iHeartRadio app, basically the two major streaming apps.
Right.
On that there was the one major radio company and then everybody else.
Right. Basically, you're right.
Yeah. And so, you know, I hadn't seen radio.com before, but it looks very, very similar to the typical streaming apps. It's got to be rough to start a streaming app now because you've got Beats and Apple Music. Now they've merged. Mm-hmm. You've got Pandora. You've got Spotify. And now we're seeing with TuneIn and iHeartRadio, you're getting traditional radio stations are aggregated. Most traditional broadcast radio stations these days will have a web stream, but it's nice to be able to aggregate them together. They don't want you to switch stations between them,
right?
But it's interesting now trying to start a company to compete with something that's already entrenched.
Yeah, like, what is it? The iHeartRadio, they've been doing a big push to do playlists. Right. If you got a certain event going on, there's a playlist for that. Just again, like you said, there's so many services out there. They're trying to set themselves apart from the others to make it unique that you want to go to theirs.
Right. But the good thing for us is there's a million ways to get mm-hmm. your music.
Oh, yeah.
And especially handy if you move. You can still listen to your favorite shows from back home. Or you have relatives yep. in another city. Or, mm-hmm. or, you know, George and his German show. He's got a lot of listeners from Germany.
Right. And one of the things that that works nicely is it's sort of like a VCR mm-hmm. for music or mm-hmm. for yeah. a show.
Yep.
So, you know, I can't listen to sound bites live. So I listen to it during the week when I run, or that mm-hmm. clearly is not actually me. I listen to it during the week when I'm doing
something else.
Number
of our service people listen to it.
Yeah. A lot of service people listen to it. And again, thanks to each and every one of you for putting yourself in harm's way to keep me safe. And I appreciate mm-hmm. that. We all do. But the basic point there is that we have lots of different ways to get our music, and everybody wants to be your music choice,
provider.
Right? Music provider. And it's getting harder and harder to differentiate yourself from the crowd. Well, you know, when everybody does it, some have a built-in advantage. Apple, for example. Mm-hmm. It comes on your phone.
Yeah.
You know? Google Play comes on your phone. Not that a lot of people use Google Play. They don't know about it. But it comes on your phone. So you can do a lot of that stuff right through there. iTunes comes on your phone, comes on your computer. So you know how to use it. And Apple talks about it all the time, so everybody knows about it and knows how it works. They may not like the way it works, but they know how it works.
Yep.
But you know, Pandora is very well known. I have a great app on my Linux box called Piano Bar, and it's a command line version of Pandora. So I can open up a little terminal window. And
of course you can.
Of course I can. And I can start playing it in the background so it doesn't take up anything, any space anywhere else. There's also one called Piano Bar Fly, I discovered, that actually lets you rip all the streams from Pandora.
And you can do that now on the Chromebook, too. Just bring down the app and put the app on, put it down the corner, have that playing. You're going to, you know, on with right. whatever you're working on, surf right. the internet or anything else, and I could still hear what's, you know, whatever yep. I want to on the radio.
Yep. And so, you know, you've got a lot of apps that everybody wants to be your music provider of choice. And so we, as the music listening public, have a lot of options nowadays. So that's very nice. But wading through the confusing morass of choices is a hard one. The good news is many of them are free or have a free component.
Mm-hmm.
So you can listen to TuneIn without paying for it. You can listen to Pandora without paying for it. Oops. You can listen to Spotify without paying for it. You can listen to a lot of them without paying for it. But, you know, you get ads,
yep.
but you can hear them. And then if you really like it, you may decide, well, it's worth, you know, $10 a month or $100 a year, whatever it is, to get rid of the ads and listen to this station.
So we're talking about music, you know, confusing morass. That'd be a good band name.
There probably is one out there. We're the confusing morass.
Yeah.
you have and you know they're doing a lot now. You can listen to it over Google Home or, as Dennis says, the Alaska device mm-hmm. in your home. You can listen to Pandora or TuneIn or whatever over those devices, so you don't necessarily even have to turn on your computer.
Mm-mm.
You know, if you've got an iPod or, as I have, an iPod, I can listen to all of those things as well. So it's really nice to be able to listen to music anywhere, take music anywhere, do whatever you want with music anywhere. The big problem is finding out which one is yeah. best. But we seem to be obsessed with best. You know, if this works great for this and that works great for that, you don't have to use just one or the other. You can use both.
Well, some folks are just lazy. They just want it all handed to them.
Right.
You know, they don't want to do their homework. Just like we were saying before, when it came to cutting the cord and, you know, deciding on, you know, what service you wanted to go to. Again, folks just are so used to saying, well, here, use this product and that'll do it. And they, oh, okay, and they just go ahead. They don't want to take the time to do research.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, do it for themselves. They got so many other products being shoved at them. Just say, yeah, you can do this, you can do this. Okay.
My friend does this, and I want to, too. Okay, that's a little bit of research, but.
Right.
Yeah.
But the reality is that you can do all of these things. And you know, it's the same thing with cord cutters.
Mm-hmm.
I hear this from people all the time.
Too many choices.
What should I do? I don't know you.
You got to do your homework.
And the problem is, that's what I tell them, and they don't, you know. For example, you know, my wife and I have talked about cutting the cord, and I said, okay, here's what we have to do. We have to make a list of all the programs we watch, which ones we can live without.
Yep.
Then we go through each and every one of the possible choices and see what that one provides for what amount of money, and make our decision. And if it turns out that, you know, what we have now, Spectrum, is the best choice, then we stick with it.
One of the things that we tell our customers, because we do seminars in cord cutting too, best is so subjective. The easiest thing to do is stick with Spectrum.
Right.
Because all your channels are there. They're all in one place. You can save money if you get some of your channels on Sling and some of your channels on Netflix and, well, not even channels now, some shows.
Right.
And have two or three different services, but then you're going to have to learn the remote control and learn that input selector to switch from, you know, your cable box to another set-top box like a Apple TV or a Roku or an Amazon. And so, yeah, you can save money by subscribing to multiple different services. It's just a little more confusing that way. So
right.
Do you want to, is best saving money or is best easiest to use?
Right. And also there's that difference between it's 8 o'clock Tuesday night, I got to watch Gibbs.
Yep.
So I feel like watching Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever time of day or night it is. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, holy moly, we are sound bites.
Still?
Still.
Mm.
Whether you like it or not.
Year's half over with.
Our sound bites. So here's, this is a nice thing that Facebook is doing.
Huh?
Yeah, this is actually kind of cool. So maybe you don't want to know the ending to a World Cup game or Avengers movie until you've watched it, or just need to quiet an exhausting political topic like Trump.
Thanos demands no spoilers.
What?
Thanos demands no spoilers.
Thanos demands no spoilers. Facebook is now testing the option to snooze specific keywords so you don't see them for 30 days in news feeds or groups. The feature rolled out to a small percentage of users starting Wednesday. It could make people both more comfortable browsing the social network when they're trying to avoid something and not feel guilty posting about sensitive topics. To snooze a keyword, you first have to find a post that includes it. That kind of defeats the whole purpose, as you might run into the spoiler you didn't want to see. But when asked about the problem, a Facebook spokesrobot told us that the company is looking into adding a preemptive snooze option in the next few weeks, potentially in newsfeed preferences. It's also considering a recurring snooze list, so you could easily re-enable hiding your favorite sports team before any game you have to watch on delay. For now, though, when you see the word, you can hit the drop-down arrow on the post, which will reveal an option to snooze keywords in this post. Tapping that reveals a list of nouns from the post you might want to nix without common words like the in the way. So if you use the feature on a post that said England won its World Cup game against Tunisia, yes, the feature would pull out
what?
World Cup as an example.
Haven't watched that game yet.
No spoiler. Exactly. The feature would pull out World Cup England and Tunisia. Select all the ones you want to snooze. For example, World Cup, and both containing those will be hidden for a month. Currently, the feature only works on text, not images, and won't suggest synonyms you might want to snooze as well. The spokesrobot said the feature was something that kept coming up in Facebook interviews with users. No, really? The option applies to any organic content, but you can't block ads with it. So if you snooze Deadpool, you won't see the posts from friends about the movie, but might still see ads to buy the tickets. Facebook's excuse for this is that the ads belong to a separate team and therefore a separate algorithm. But let's face it, they just don't want to open themselves up to users mass blocking their revenue driver. The spokesrobot also said that snoozing isn't currently being used for other content, isn't being used currently for other content and ad marketing purposes. Facebook was asked by why users can't permanently mute keywords like Twitter. Like Twitter launched, rather, in November of 2016, or the way Instagram launched keyword blocking for your post comments in September of 2016. They said if we're hearing from people that they wanted more or less time, they might that might get added as the feature rolls out beyond a test. There is some sense to defaulting to only temporary muting, as users might simply forget that they blocked their favorite sports team before a big game and then wouldn't see it mentioned forever after. But when it comes to abuse, permanent muting is something Facebook really should offer. Instead, it relied on users flagging abuse like racial slurs, and it recently revealed its content moderation guidelines. Some topics that are fine for others could be tough for certain people to see, though, and helping users prevent trauma probably deserves to be prioritized above stopping reality TV spoilers. So have you seen this feature yet? It is rolling out slowly. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 and toll-free 1-800-790-0400.
Yeah, it's always annoying when somebody spoils something that you wanted to watch, or the games especially, you know, and that's almost become a meme in TV shows is, you know, don't tell me who won the game. I've got it taped at home.
Right. Yeah, but you see it. You're right. You see it all the time. It's the kind of thing that that many people have an issue with, a problem with. You know, I may not want to see that issue of about a certain politician, or I might not want to see that spoiler about a certain movie or comic book or whatever. You know, this happened years ago, so I think everybody knows that it happened. But you know, to say what?
The Titanic.
Captain America died.
The Titanic sank.
The Titanic sank. Holy cow! That sort of thing. It happens all the time.
Yeah, the Russo brothers did put out a letter, you know, asking people not to spoil Infinity War. And so it started going around. The original letter had Infinity Gauntlet in the edge. So, you know, don't spoil it when you're coming out of the movie.
Right.
But stay till the end of the... I still can't believe people who get up and leave when the credits start. Have you never seen a Marvel movie before?
Well, of course, now, don't forget, I was an actor for many, many years, so I stayed at the end of every credit of every movie.
There's so much added on to the
end. I need to see who the third assistant best boy was.
I need to see that stuff. I still know people in the industry who are the third assistant best boy, and I like to see their names on the screen.
And especially when he gets promoted to the second assistant best boy.
And I always applaud every time the system administrator comes on for pretty much any show.
The production babies.
The production babies, exactly right. Yep. I love that stuff. And people just walk out, you know. It's kind of ridiculous.
But if you walked out at the end of Infinity War before the final scene, you missed something huge.
Yeah.
Stay through the credits. There are always extra scenes. What was it? Guardians of the Galaxy had 9 extra scenes during the credits?
Mm-hmm.
I think Infinity War only has 2, but stay
exactly right. It's ridiculous to leave. It's but people do it. They you know, it's just, these are the same people, of course, who leave early at church.
Well, it's a rush to get to the car so you can get out of the parking lot before it goes crazy.
You might have to wait, you know, a couple minutes in line.
Well, if you wait till after the credits, it's just as empty.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Although I forget what movie it was, another Marvel movie probably, when the final scene showed and the lights came up and we get up and turn around, the theater's like half full.
Yeah.
And we go, yeah, you people know.
Exactly. My father used to always be the first one to church, like 45 minutes early, and the last one to leave by half an hour. The problem was at our church, people parked. They had a narrow lot that they were given, and so people parked right one in a row. Mm-hmm. So if the first person didn't leave, you couldn't get out. That was my father. That was my father every Sunday morning. People, I would see people who knew us say, "Yeah, I'm parked behind your father. There's no point in me leaving." Yeah, okay.
They know better.
Yeah, they know better. So yeah, it's a, but yeah, so it's nice. I think that Facebook is doing this because, and of course they don't. They're not doing it for you. They don't care about you.
Yeah, they.
But what they discovered apparently was that the number when a blockbuster movie came out or whatever, the number of people who got on Facebook would go down for a couple of days because people didn't want the spoilers.
Yeah.
So now they've started doing this, but again, like they said in the like I said in the article, they in the news story they don't let you put in your own keyword. You have to pull it out of a post. So you may see the Captain America died post from the comic book back 10 years ago.
But he came back.
But he came back. Well, of course he came back.
It's a comic book. It was only a flesh wound.
No one's ever dead.
Yeah, no one's ever actually dead in a comic
flesh
book.
Wound.
It's a flesh wound. It's only a flesh wound. It's only a flesh wound.
Yeah, so half his arm's ripped off.
Come back. I'll bite your kneecaps off.
Right. His heart's hanging out, you know. But he came back.
He came back. It was a dream or whatever. Yeah.
You should wear more sweaters.
It's the best ending ever. Best ending ever of any series ever, anywhere, ever. It will never be even equaled, much less topped. Ah, what a great, great ending. I left for half an hour. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Okay. Anyway, the point here is that they do let you do that, but you have to see a post about the thing before you can mute it. So you may see that spoiler anyway. But at least it's a start, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And
or you might be able to maybe go back to an older post. Do a search on an older post that might have that name, say like Captain America referenced, select it, and then
if you can get you know you and a friend both post can't wait to go see Infinity War,
yeah,
and then you can select their post, they can select your post, pull out Infinity War, and then block it for 30 days so that. And I suppose, I don't know, because it hasn't hit my feed yet, but I suppose you can go in and unblock it again at some point. So once you've seen it, you should be able to be able to
then get in and comment on it after you've seen it, and you can make your, your criticism on it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I would, most definitely.
But it's a nice thought that they have that available. I realize it's not. For you, it's for them, so their usage doesn't go down after a blockbuster is announced.
I like the different articles about it, talking about the different spoilers, and one of them is the Bachelorette ending, one of them is the Westworld ending, one of them is the World Cup scores.
Right. All right, that music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. And I'm not gonna. I want to, but I'm not gonna do it. And I'm Nick Francesco, and we definitely want to and will thank each and every one of you for listening and for calling in. We're delighted. And again, thanks to all of you who were kind and generous enough to be part of this membership drive and get us over the hump. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be right back here next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.